Welcome to the Film Florida podcast. My name is John Lux, and I'm the Executive Director of Film Florida. Today, our guest is Lori Wyman. Lori is an award-winning casting director and owner of Lori Wyman Casting. Lori is a member of the Casting Society of America, the professional organization of casting directors in the United States, and her offices are in North Miami Beach. Lori, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
So let's start kind of at the beginning of your career. Tell us how you got started in the industry.
I guess I'd always wanted to be in the film industry in some form or another. I was an aspiring actress as a child. You know, I did all the school plays, and I was a classical pianist, and I was always involved in all the drama programs. And when I graduated from college, which I graduated with a degree in speech and communications from the University of Miami, one of the professors at the University of Miami made an announcement in her class that one of the premier talent agencies at the time, called Act One, was looking for somebody to do filing and typing. So in my gut, I said, that's my job. That's my job. Because I didn't know if I really wanted to be an actress, but I loved the industry and I loved the actors and I loved that whole thing. So I applied for the job and I got it, and I did filing and typing for about 3 days, you know, because they kind of threw me into it. And I worked there for 5 years, and over the course of 5 years, I did pretty much everything you would do at a talent agency. I watered plants. I made coffee. I also filed pictures. I answered the phones. I put actors on tape. I did castings with the casting directors for movies, for television shows, for commercials, for print ads, for everything you could think of. I did everything. At the time, this was back in the late 70s, there were only a very few casting directors and not as many talent agencies as there are now. So oftentimes, we would get the castings where now maybe a client would call a casting director to do the castings. At the time, a client might call our agency, and we would conduct a full-day casting session, and I was the person who would put the actors on tape. And after several years of doing that, I said, you know what? I want more of a hand in the actual casting, and I wanted to be a casting director. And so I started working for the company that was handling the Miami Vice television series back in the 80s. And after working there for a couple of years, the producer of the Miami Vice show at the time invited me out for dinner, and he offered me a position as the in-house casting director at Miami Vice. And that was the last 2 seasons of Miami Vice. And that kind of catapulted me into, you know, a different stratosphere. And that was the beginnings of my career.
I want to get back to Miami Vice in just a minute, but you said a couple of things in there that I want to clarify for those that might not be familiar. You used terms like talent agent or talent agency versus a casting director. So which one are you, and what's the difference between the two?
That is a great question, John, because that is something that a lot of people always confuse. So a talent agent is just that. It's an agent for the talent, for the actors, for the models, for the talent. The all of the actors, the models, collectively they're known as talent. And so when you're a talent agent or you own a talent agency, you represent the talent. You are an agent for the talent, as opposed to a casting director who that person directs castings. And oftentimes people put them together and call them a casting agent. But you're not an agent for the castings. You're an agent for the talent. And it's funny because just about a week ago, I received an email from a potential client, and he wrote in it, he goes, oh, I'm looking to cast this spot, and it was for a commercial, and he says, I'm looking to cast this spot, and I'm looking for a casting agent. And so I thought, he's not looking for me. He thinks he's looking for an agent, but he's combining the two terms. And when I called him back and I explained what I do, and I explained, he said, oh, yeah, you're right. I just want an agent who could just submit some actors. So I am, at this point, a casting director. I direct castings. When I first started out in the industry, I was a talent agent, so I was an agent for the talent. But that's a great question because people always confuse those two terms.
So when it comes to working on projects, so a talent agency, it's their job to try and get their talent placed, and in order to do so, they essentially have to have folks like you as the casting director want those talents for the project.
Correct. And okay. It's interesting because the reason that I decided, I loved being an agent. I loved being an agent and I loved working with the actors. You know, you're part agent and part psychologist because when the actor doesn't get the job, they call you, oh my gosh, what did I do wrong? What's wrong with me? And I loved that part as well. But the one particular incident that really made me decide I wanted to be a casting director was way back when I worked for the agency, there was a job that was casting by one of the casting directors in South Florida at the time, and I knew who was the perfect actor for the role. I knew who was the perfect actor, and I tried to get him to go on that casting. And the casting director said, no, he's not right. I said, I think he's perfect. No, he's not right. I think he's perfect. And I said, and I've already given him a time to come to your casting. So she said, well, okay, but I think you're making a big mistake. I'll see him for you, she said. Well, P.S., he booked the job. And at the time, this particular casting director wrote an article, like a column, for one of the newspapers, for one of the industry magazines. And she wrote, because this person was supposed to be playing the role of Dracula. It was a Dracula, I think that's what it was. And the title of her article was, her name, Finds the Perfect Dracula. And I thought, no, you didn't. You actually argued with me and wouldn't see him. And that was my first taste of somebody stealing my work. And I thought, no, I want more of a hand in casting because I have a good eye. I had a good eye. I've been doing theater since I'm 5 years old. I've been around actors. I know what's good. I know what's not good. That really hurt my feelings a lot. I mean, I don't mind if you write an article saying you found the perfect Dracula because an agent asked you to see this person. That's fine. You didn't have to say my name. But just to completely steal the whole thing. And that was really the first indication I said, no, I think I want to be a casting director. I want more of a hand in the actual casting.
Do you think being a good casting director, is that learned or is that just a God-given skill that you have a knack for? What do you think?
I think there's probably a combination of both. I think that I have found, you know, over the years, I've had many people work for me. I've had casting assistants, casting associates. And I find the people who are better at noticing the good talent are the ones who have some kind of a theater background, some kind of a drama background. People who come in with no background whatsoever, but maybe they're good clerical people, you know, so I've brought them in to do the paperwork. They're not necessarily as in tune to what is good and what is not good. However, when I do bring people in, I make them sit in casting sessions with me, and after every actor, I put everybody through the paces because this is my work. I can't have somebody running a casting session if they don't know my vision. So after every actor, I will look at them and I will say, do you think that person was good? And depending on what they say, I say yes or no, and this is why. And as the day and the days and the weeks go on, they start to see through my eyes. Okay, I'm getting it. It takes time. It takes time, like anything. But I think that you have to have some kind of an artistic brain. I think you have to have some kind of background in this industry somewhere I know some of the earlier casting directors in South Florida had no background at all in the industry, and I think it showed somewhat. I think it showed in the earlier days, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, but I think it's a combination of both.
So you talked about kind of getting your break, being brought in on Miami Vice. Is that when you officially opened Lori Wyman Casting?
No. Actually, I officially opened Lori Wyman Casting I opened it in 1990, and I started working on the Miami Vice series in 1985, and I started working at the talent agency in 1979. Because Miami Vice hired me in-house, I didn't really have my own company at the time. I was just an individual getting a paycheck every Friday at Miami Vice. Then I went up to Jupiter and did the Burt Reynolds television series, BL Striker. And that was the same situation where they hired me in-house, and they gave me an office and a telephone and, you know, a legal pad and a desk and a window. And so that was also in-house. And then after BL Striker, I went on to do another television series down in Miami called Wise Guy, which was a Stephen J. Cannell film, television series, pardon me. And they did six episodes. They did a six-episode arc. And I was in-house doing that show. And when that show was over, there were no more shows to hire me in-house. And a lot of my friends said, why don't you open your own place? And that was scary because up until that point, I had had a nice little cushy position where I would work in-house and every Friday I would get a paycheck and somebody else was paying all the overhead. And there's a lot of security in that, you know, where I didn't really have the responsibility. I didn't want the responsibility. It was scary. And then when Wise Guy was over, several of my friends sat me down and said, it's time for you to open your own office. And that's when that happened.
And almost 30 years later, you're still going.
Is that what it is? 28? Yeah, something like that. Yeah, a long time.
So let's go back to Miami Vice. So the show had already established itself of being what it was, which just absolutely exploded nationwide, worldwide, and obviously had such a tremendous impact on the South Florida culture and community. What was it like being brought into something that was so big at that time?
I started working on it in the second season. So I missed the first season. And the second season, I was working in-house for the casting company, and then the second and third season, and then fourth and fifth. It was amazing, actually. It was like you were queen for a day, but it lasted for, in my case, almost 4 years, where everybody wanted a piece of you. Now, this is before internet. This is before email. So I was getting manila envelopes by the hundreds from actors and people who were just not even actors, who just wanted to be on the television show, from all over the world. I mean, now we get emails from all over the world, but we don't look at it that intensely as you do when you get an envelope with a postmark from Brazil and a postmark from India and a postmark from somewhere in the Middle East. And, you know, I want to be on Miami Vice. It was iconic. It was, I'll tell you something, at the beginning of the fifth season, and this is just such a visual, at the beginning of the fifth season, I was working in-house. We had our office in the Alexander Hotel on Miami Beach, and I guess at the beginning of the season, everybody was, you know, trying to schmooze me, don't forget me, and everybody sent flowers, and one of the people who worked with me down the hall walked in my office, and my office had so many floral arrangements. He looked around the room. He said, oh, my gosh, this place looks like a funeral parlor. It was laden with floral arrangements. Congratulations. Welcome back. Da, da, da. And I just have that visual in my head. It was really quite impressive. But, you know, there's a restaurant in Miami called Joe's Stone Crab, and it's a pretty well-known, popular restaurant. and you cannot make reservations. It's still open. It was open back then. It's still open. You cannot make reservations. And I remember calling them once and saying, hello, this is Lori Wyman. I'm the casting director of Miami Vice, and I'd like to bring several people over for dinner tonight. Oh, yes. What time would you like to come? Whatever time, 6 o'clock. Fine. And we walked in, and they walked us right to the back. That was pretty cool.
And while you were on Miami Vice, do you recall any, you know, being involved in casting somebody who at the time was, you know, for lack of a better term, just another headshot, but has turned out to be a huge megastar?
Well, for me, because I was only allowed to cast the quote-unquote local people, you know, and towards the fifth season, they actually were giving local people bigger roles, which was very nice. But the casting director in New York was able to bring in 5 characters per episode. That was the maximum number that they were allowing to come in from out of town. And so she would send down all of these up-and-coming actors to be on Miami Vice. And all of these up-and-coming actors, and a lot of them nobody ever heard of because they were new, but she had met them in New York and she liked them, and they would come through our office. They would come through our casting office. And there were 3 of us in our office. There was the girl who sat at the front desk, who was the quote-unquote clerical person. She did all the paperwork. She typed up all the contracts. She sat with all of the actors who came in from out of town, and she had them fill out their contracts, and she did all of my paperwork. Then we had the person who did all of the extras, all of the stand-ins and the photo doubles and the background, and she did all of that. And then I was the person who did all the speaking roles that were cast out of South Florida. And some episodes, there were 20, 25 people. I mean, it was huge. It was huge. And so all of the people who came in from out of town came through our office. And there was a young, beautiful ingenue who came in with her beautiful, big, curly brown hair. And I think to myself, too bad I didn't get all these people to autograph the scripts. Every time they came in, there was Julia Roberts that nobody really knew of, and a young 20-year-old, Helena Bonham Carter, and Stanley Tucci. I mean, there were so many. And one day I opened, we had a notebook, and Marjorie, who was our quote-unquote secretary person, she would type up a cast list every episode, and I kept them in a notebook, and it's on my shelf in my office now. And one day I opened it up and I said to Erin, my assistant now, I said, hey, you want to see all the people we cast on Miami Vice? And it was an amazing Brian Dennehy, and I mean, I can't even think of all of them because there were so many. John Leguizamo, and just people that you didn't know at the time who they were just up-and-coming, wonderful actors. Michael Chiklis, who went on to have The Commish and a couple of other big shows, when he came to do an episode of Miami Vice, he had just finished filming a movie called Wired, where he played John Belushi, but it hadn't come out yet. And he was this young, you know, wide-eyed, bushy-tailed kid who came into our office. He was so excited, and he said, oh, yeah, and I just did this movie, and oh, we were so excited for him. And then he goes on, and he's Mr. Big Shot Commish, you know. There were a lot. There were an awful lot. Yeah.
And that's the great thing, like, nowadays, if you happen to catch an episode of Miami Vice online or one of the streaming services or on cable, just – you can't go an episode without saying, oh, I didn't know he was on this, or I
right.
didn't know she was on it. It was just a who's who of anybody. Back then, they weren't the huge names, but now just to see the volume of people that went through that show is pretty astounding to look back on now.
Yeah. Very astounding.
So more recent shows that you worked on down in South Florida were Ballers and Bloodline, which were some great series that were filmed in South Florida. Talk about your work on those as well.
Well, Bloodline was an amazing show because the producers allowed me, my company, to look for some of the much bigger roles. Oftentimes, when a show comes to Florida, they come already with all of their stars, guest stars, you know, their recurrings, their bigger roles, and we're allowed to do, you know, the secretary that has one line and the waitress that says, would you like some coffee, sir? But Bloodline was different. Bloodline wanted the local color. They wanted to see what we had in Florida. And the beauty of Bloodline is they recognized the talent. They didn't look at people in Florida as, oh, they're from Florida. They looked at them as their performers, period. They didn't put their nose down at us. They gave us every opportunity to cast as many roles as possible out of the Florida area. And I am always so grateful because I have been such a staunch supporter of Florida talent for all of these decades. And I know what we have here. And I know that when you see a big shot actor in New York or L.A., they're not from L.A. They're from somewhere else. But there's that mentality that says, oh, if they're an L.A. actor, they're better. If they're a Florida actor, they're not so good. Well, that's not true. And that's one of the reasons I loved working on Bloodline, because they gave the actors the opportunity to show off their talent. And we booked a lot of recurring roles, of guest star roles. And when we would book somebody in a smaller role, they would recognize, hey, that's a good actor. Let's give them another episode and another episode and another episode. And I was oh so grateful about that. Ballers was a different animal. You know, it was a different kind of show. You know, it was for HBO, so you could get away with more stuff on that. But again, they allowed us to have some wonderful roles. There was an actress that we booked as a doctor to the Dwayne Johnson character. And then when they left South Florida, because of the fact that there was no more film incentive, but they went to L.A., but they brought her out there. And that was really nice. I was so happy to see that. Even though they weren't filming in Florida anymore, they did recognize some of the actors that they had cast, and they said, well, you know, just because we're not there doesn't mean we can't still use those people as actors. So both of those shows were very friendly to Florida actors.
And you won some awards for your work on Bloodline, correct?
I did. You had mentioned that I'm a member of the CSA, which is the Casting Society of America. And the Casting Society of America has our award called the Artios Award. It's A-R-T-I-O-S. And the Artios Award is for excellence in casting. You know, it's kind of like, you know, the Oscars are for the actors and for the most part. And we were actually nominated all three seasons. And that's casting directors recognizing the work of other casting directors. So we were nominated for all three seasons for an Artios Award, and we won for the second season of Bloodline.
That's a tribute, obviously, to you, but that speaks also to what you mentioned about the available talent here in Florida.
Yes.
So in addition to your casting services, your company also does classes, seminars, coaching sessions, things like that. Talk about those.
I'll tell you how that started. When I was casting Miami Vice, this is how far back it goes. When I was casting Miami Vice, back then there wasn't as much television or film production in South Florida or in Florida in general. And so every time an actor would come into audition, a lot of them had a theater background. So they had an acting foundation, but they had no idea how to relate to a camera, because there's acting for film and television is quite different than acting for the theater, for the stage. So these actors would come in having a stage background, and they would be performing to the last person in the last row, and I'd say, no, you're performing to something this big, and I would hold my index finger and my thumb up, making it look like a circle, because that's what the lens of a camera looks like. And I said, this is what you're performing to. You cannot be that big. Your face has to be smaller. Your expressions have to be smaller. Everything has to be brought down. So oftentimes when an actor would come in to audition for me for Miami Vice, I would give them a 5 or 10 minute lesson in how to bring down their acting because I needed to. Because you see, on Miami Vice, we were casting 22 episodes per season. And every episode, I was casting between 15 and 22 actors per episode. If you do the math, you multiply even 15 times 22 episodes. That's a lot of actors. Plus, I had to present 5 or 6 actors for each role. So I had to come up with hundreds and thousands of people per season. It was to my advantage to work with these actors. I would go to lots of theater, and I would, after the shows, I would go up to people like, excuse me, would you like to audition for Miami Vice? And then after I would pick them up off the floor, I would say, okay, be in my office tomorrow morning at 2 o'clock, or tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. So one day, an actor said to me, have you ever thought of doing classes for this? And I said, oh, no. I don't teach. I'm a casting director. And I heard this, and I heard this, and I heard this, and I heard this. Because at the time, nobody in Florida was teaching auditioning for film and television skills. And to make a much longer story shorter, that's basically how I started teaching.
So you did it to help you along the way to make sure people knew what they were doing when they got into these. And it essentially, you were helping yourself in by doing these classes.
Yes, and it's funny you said that, because oftentimes when I teach, I will say to the actors in the class, I will say, actually, this is a very selfish, I use the word selfish. I say, actually, this is a very selfish thing that I'm doing, because the better you look, the better I look.
So you had mentioned, you know, how things have changed, you know, from the times of getting manila envelopes with headshots versus emails now. So the industry continues to change worldwide, and obviously Florida is no different. Besides the way, you know, things are delivered, how have things changed that have impacted the way you work in your industry?
Many. There are many items. I'll address a couple of them. One is, of course, the Internet, whereas many years ago I would put people on tape. It started out with 3/4-inch tapes, were these giant cassettes, and then we went down to VHS tapes, and then we went down to little DVDs, and you would do a casting all day, and then you would, you know, rush, and get your package together and run to FedEx and put it in the FedEx and wait until they got it the next day, and then wait till they watched an hour or two of it, and then they would respond. Now everything is immediate. Now, not only can I press a button and within a moment of finishing my casting, my client can have it, or even back that up, I can send them the link in the morning, and as I upload to the link throughout the day, they can keep watching it. I can also do real-time casting. I don't even have to be there. I've done Skype castings where I have my computer set up and the client is in Omaha, Nebraska, and I'm in South Florida or wherever, and they can give direction to the actors while we are conducting the casting. Another wonderful aspect of that for the actor is the actor doesn't have to get in the car and drive 4 hours, 10 hours, or jump on an airplane and be in my office for a 3 to 5 minute audition. They can self-tape wherever they are. They can email it in, and I can upload it to my link, and I can present a much fuller casting to my client. So the Internet has really helped. That's the positive. The negative, as I've heard from actors, is because they send in an audition, they could be one of 50 or 100 auditions. There's no guarantee that they're being seen. There's no guarantee that their video is being looked at. And I'll tell you something that happened to me last week. I'm casting this little sitcom, and we had asked that all of the videos be in by Monday, whatever the Monday was, that Monday. The client called me 2 days before that Monday on a Saturday and said to me, I really want to see something this weekend. And I said, well, I know, but we had given the deadline of next Monday. Well, don't you have anything yet? I said, well, yes, I do. Well, can you just send me what you have? He booked somebody from what he saw that weekend. And when he booked somebody, the people who got their videos in on that Monday were out of luck. Whereas if it had been a live casting session on that Monday, everybody would have shown up. He would have shown up. But see, when you know that you have the opportunity to see a video, it's like, well, don't you have anything yet? And so I felt badly for the actors who wait. I always tell actors, please don't wait till the deadline. That is one issue that I harp on. I'm giving you until next Monday. However, don't wait until the last minute, because oftentimes exactly the story I just told you happens. A client wants to see their videos beforehand. Isn't there any way that you can send me something in advance? So I send them what I already have. And if they like it, there's no reason for them to continue watching. Oh, I'm happy with this girl. We're done. So that is one of the ways, the positive and the negative. Another issue that has affected my business specifically is the topic of a financial film incentive. And the reason that is a positive and a negative, there never used to be a film incentive. If somebody wanted a film in Miami because they wanted the beach and they wanted the weather and they wanted the bikini babes, they came to Miami and they filmed. If they wanted a film in Chicago in the winter because they needed snow, they went to Chicago in the winter and they got their snow. But then something happened. And what happened was Canada, the rate of exchange in Canada, their Canadian dollar to the United States dollar, was you could get $1.50's worth of product for a dollar if you shot in Canada. So we had the Runaway production, and all of this production, the United States production, started filming in Vancouver, Canada. The state of North Carolina said, well, wait a minute. What if we offered a film incentive to lure some of this production back to the United States? And back then, Wilmington, North Carolina became a huge film hub, and there was a lot of production being done in North Carolina, and specifically Wilmington, North Carolina. Well, then other states started jumping on that bandwagon. And Florida, back in 2012, I believe, 11, 12, had a very, very lucrative film incentive. And I, as a casting director, benefited from that. I was doing 5 television series at the same time. I was doing Magic City. I was doing Burn Notice. I was doing Graceland. I was doing 5 television series at the same time. It was amazing. It was fabulous. And then our film incentive went away. And we mentioned Ballers earlier. Ballers came to Miami to film, partly because of our weather, partly because of what we have in South Florida to offer, but partly because of the film incentive. And after they filmed there for 2 seasons, this film incentive money dried up for them, and they left town. When they left town, it impacted my little company, my little one tiny little company had a 6-figure loss. That's how it impacted my tiny little company. And as we know, I'm in the industry, but there are so many support industries that are impacted. Because see, when Lori Wyman Casting is working, the people who work for Lori Wyman Casting can go out for dinner more. that means the restaurants get more income. Maybe I need a new car. I can finally buy a new car. The automotive companies are impacted. Maybe I can take my family to Disney World. There are other states that are getting the film work that should be coming to Florida. And when I say should be coming to Florida, what I mean is these are productions that have been written for Florida. There are television series that are set in Florida that do not film in Florida because there is no incentive. And what I mean by that is financial incentive. Sure, they'll come to Miami and they'll film 2 weeks, 3 weeks in Miami. The Miami part that absolutely has to be filmed in Miami. But they can film in a warehouse anywhere in the United States. They can film inside of a house anywhere in the United States. So those two things, the internet and the film incentives, have greatly impacted my company and the industry in Florida as a whole.
That's very well said, and you know, unfortunately, we hear a similar story about the incentive losses with a lot of companies, a lot of individuals, a lot of support services as well, and it obviously continues to be a challenge. Moving on to another question I had, whether it's any of the television series or films that you've worked on that we've talked about already, or maybe something else. I mean, are there some your favorite project that you've ever worked on? And if, you know, for a weird reason that people wouldn't suspect, do you have any specific favorites?
Well, one of my favorite projects was Recount. Recount was an HBO movie that was a recreation of the 2000 presidential election. And as you may recall, Florida was front and center during that particular election. There were a lot of players in that, you know, that was the election between George Bush and Al Gore. And at the time we had Jeb Bush as our governor. So there was a lot of controversy going on because at first they announced that Al Gore was the winner in Florida, and then something happened, and then he wasn't. And so there was a big controversy going on. And so Danny Strong, who was the writer, wrote this beautiful script, and it was called Recount, and how we were recounting the votes. Why was it one of my favorite projects? Because they allowed me in Florida to cast approximately 80 roles on that movie. And a good percentage of those roles were lookalikes. I had to find an Al Gore lookalike, a George Bush lookalike, a Tipper Gore lookalike, a Ruth Bader Ginsburg lookalike. All of the political players in that story we had to cast and recreate. And I won an Artios Award for that, and I was nominated for an Emmy for casting for that. And it was just such an amazing casting experience. Jay Roach was the director, and he was such a wonderful person to work with. David Rubin was the Los Angeles casting director, who has been an angel for me in my career. And it allowed me, I toured the state of Florida. I cast in Miami. I cast in Orlando. I cast in Jacksonville. I went up and down the coast several times to do casting. It was a long process, but it was a very detailed casting. And so it wasn't just finding your best actor. It was finding your best actor who looks like somebody. And when they didn't exactly look like the person, then I was able to create. So there was an actor who came in, and the role that he booked was a political figure named Bob Zelick. And he didn't exactly look like Bob Zelig, but he did have a mustache. So it's like, okay, let's part your hair on the side. Let's do the comb over. Let's give you little wire glasses. Let's do this, this, and this. And let's make you look like this particular character. And so I did that with a lot of actors, helping them look like whom I needed them to look like. And it was a work of art.
Now, is that the first time you had to cast for a project where you had specific lookalikes, a lot of them like that?
No, because I actually was the Florida casting director for the America's Most Wanted television series for over 20 years. And America's Most Wanted was all about lookalikes. You know, they would give me the scripts. They would send me the photos of the people whom they needed to recreate. And so I would call somebody and I would say, okay, we need you to come in. I need you to look like this picture. It was kind of like a hobby of mine to try to do that. I loved doing that. I got really, really, really good at it. And I think I started working on America's Most Wanted in the early 90s. So by the time Recount came, I had been doing that sort of casting for well over a decade. And so I had gotten really good at it.
That's great. That's a great story. So that'll do it for this episode of the Film Florida Podcast. Thanks to Lori Wyman for joining us, and thank you for listening. To learn more about Lori Wyman Casting, you can visit LoriWymanCasting.com. That's LoriWymanCasting.com. And, of course, for more information about Film Florida, go to FilmFlorida.org, and be sure to like all of our pages on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Lori, once again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, John.